This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
The culture wars have distorted the dramatic story of how Americans came to worship freely. Many activists on the right maintain that the United States was founded as a Christian nation. Many on the left contend that the founders were secular or deist, and that the First Amendment was designed to boldly separate church and state. Author Stephen Waldman contends that none of these claims are true in his new book, Founding Faith, Providence, Politics, and the Birth of Religious Freedom in America. Stephen Waldman is co-founder, CEO, and editor-in-chief of BeliefNet.com, the largest interfaith website in America. He was the national editor of the U.S. News & World Report, and a national correspondent for Newsweek. Stephen Waldman joins us on the long line. How are you, Steve?
Very well. Thank you for having me here.
Absolutely. Hey, I've been really been looking forward to it. It's a terrific book, and I was saying earlier in the program, it's not just very interesting and illuminating, but I actually think this is one of those books that comes along every once in a while that's very, very important, and that the people who truly care about this country should get a hold of this and educate themselves and take a moment to read this. What's been the reaction to the book across the nation?
First, I thank you very much for those kind words. I think what's been most gratifying is that it's gotten positive reviews from evangelical Christian circles and secular liberal circles, which is, with a book like this that doesn't follow the traditional path, you run the real risk of no one liking it because it doesn't fit any of the categories. But I think it's coming out at a moment when I think people kind of realize that the old script that everyone's been following may not be right, and people have a kind of, I think, renewed open-mindedness to looking at these topics anew.
Yeah, well, that's not an easy feat to please the far left and the far right at the same time. That's quite an accomplishment.
I think part of why it's worked out that way is that, you know, in the end, I have a lot of respect for the separationist viewpoint, the folks like Madison and Jefferson who really argued hard for a separation of church and state. But what's different about the approach I've taken is that I believe that Madison and Jefferson wanted that, particularly Madison, in order to promote religion. So it's normally, the way you hear about it in a modern context is that people want separation of church and state to kind of suppress the role of religion or make it a more secular society, or at least that's the fear from many people of faith. And my argument, or one of them, is that the drive to have separation of church and state, and more broadly to have religious freedom, was not around reducing the role of influence of religion. It was around increasing the role of religion. They just had a radically different view of how to do it. They believed that the best way to promote religion was by leaving it alone and getting the government as far away from it as possible.
And also not empowering religious leaders with political clout and political power in government.
Right.
Just keep them separate.
Yeah, and there's at one point Madison used the word cognizance. He didn't want the government to have any cognizance of religion, which is a pretty amazing thing to think about. It's not even does he not want them to regulate or restrict. He doesn't want government even in the realm of religion. He doesn't want it even trying to help religion. And that was a really different approach because really in the first 150 years of the nation or of the land when it was settled before, as colonies, the colonies pretty much were following one variant or another of the European model, which was if you want to promote religion, then the government should help it. And it took a lot of different forms. You know, in the southern states, it tended to be an official Church of England. In the northern and in the New England states, it was the Puritan churches that were also supported officially. And there were different varieties, but they all had this common thread that they thought that helping religion meant the government being involved in helping it. And they also had another commonality, which was that none of these experiments worked. So that was what the founders were looking at when they decided how to create this new new system.
We're talking with author Stephen Waldman of BeliefNet.com, and the new book is Founding Faith, Providence, Politics, and the Birth of Religious Freedom in America. You know, sitting here listening to you talk, it sounds almost like a modern capitalist laissez-faire approach to religion. Hey, if we just get government out of the business of religion, sort of a free market idea, leave it alone, that will be good for those who want to practice their religion and just get government out of the way.
Yeah, I think that's a great point and a really interesting way of looking at it. And it's you can definitely hear that within the views of the founders, Ben Franklin once said, when a religion is good, I conceive it will support itself. And meaning if you support a bad religion, you're messing up the system. Jefferson once said, it is error alone which needs the support of government. Truth can stand by itself. And they actually thought that one of the consequences of having state-supported religion was to have lousy clergy. That, you know, if you got government support, it basically propped up incompetent minister.
Right.
And if you took away the pay, that, you know, and had a voluntary system, the really great ministers would be the ones that somehow managed to convince their parishioners to give some donations, and that the cream would rise to the top.
Fascinating. Stephen, today we see evangelicals, many of them, and some even more baldly than others, claim that their efforts are pointed towards breaking down the wall between church and state and getting religious leaders into government and, making government a tool of their faith. And there's many evangelicals in this country who see that as a very appropriate mission. And yet, that's very different than the role evangelicals in early America played, isn't it?
Yeah, and there's a whole body of literature among modern evangelicals that argues that the idea of separation of church and state is a myth, that it simply was not part of what the founders intended. And I disagree with that. I think there was a variety of views, but certainly one of them was the view articulated by Madison and Jefferson in favor of separation. But the really interesting thing was, as you're alluding to, is that Madison and Jefferson may have been the sort of philosophers around this, but they had to have political shock troops, and their political allies were the evangelicals of the 18th century. A lot of the most interesting battles happened right in your neck of the woods, in Virginia, where you had battles over whether or not to support religion in the state. And the big battle was over a proposal that Patrick Henry, who was then governor, proposed to have a tax help support the churches in the colony. And it was kind of a liberal bill as these things went, because it was to all different churches. It wasn't favoring one or another. George Washington supported it, thought it was a good idea. Madison opposed it. And his main allies were the Baptists of Virginia, who believed that helping or attempting to help religion would backfire, and it would get government involved, and once government is involved, it will regulate and eventually suffocate religion.
That's really fascinating, and most people just don't know that. What else do you think it is? We're talking with Stephen Waldman. The book is Founding Faith. We're going to be giving away a free copy here in just a few minutes. Stephen, what other things do you think that most Americans today who are, whether you're really engaged in these culture wars or you're just sort of watching from the sidelines and scratching your head, most of that we don't know about faith and the birth of religious freedom in America?
Well, one that I'll mention of a potential particular interest to your listeners is that I think that Madison was really the key figure, if you have to pick one, and there are many contributors, but the real most important one. And I also think that a lot of his views were shaped by a very specific set of persecutions in Northern Virginia during this time. In other words, we tend to think of the founders were reacting against Europe. You know, they saw these horrible religious wars in Europe. They really didn't have to look that far. There was plenty of persecution going on back in America, and specifically, there was a wave of persecution in Northern Virginia, in Orange County and Culpeper County, where Baptist ministers were being put in jail for the crime of basically of being a Baptist or preaching without a license. And Madison was very aware of this and involved in it, and it really helped to shape his views about religious freedom. One of the other things that is probably a common misconception from kind of the other side of the ledger is you'll often hear people say the founders were all deists.
Yeah, they weren't really truly religious.
Right, and that's really not true either. I mean, if you, first of all, a lot of them were just straight up Orthodox traditional Christians. But it is true that people like Jefferson and Franklin were closer to deism. And what we mean by deism is the belief that was popular at the time that God, that sort of rejected revelation, rejected biblical literalism, and said that God created the laws of the universe but then kind of receded from the action, like a watchmaker who creates a watch and then lets it run. And that's very often view that's ascribed to Jefferson. But what you see, particularly as they got older, was that although they did reject the Bible as a source of revelation, they believed in God, and they believed in God that intervened in their lives and in history. Jefferson believed in an afterlife. He believed in rewards and punishment in an afterlife. And so we think of them as not religious because they didn't accept and embrace the organized religion, the religious church life of their time, and for that reason they were in fact called heretics, but they were quite spiritual and quite religious in their own way.
I mean, in a modern world today of 2008, certainly Jefferson would be seen as a pretty spiritual religious guy, wouldn't he?
He would be. On the other hand, he also would be completely unelectable based on some of the things he said about religion. I mean, he's, one of my favorite images from this whole period is the thought of Thomas Jefferson sitting in the White House while he's president, and he has four different Bibles laid out in front of him because he was such a worldly fellow. He has one in English, Latin, Greek, and French, and then a fifth volume. And he has a razor or a scissors, and he's cutting up the Bibles. He's cutting out the parts he likes and pasting it into this fifth volume to create his own Bible, which he called Life and Morals of Jesus of Nazareth, often sometimes called the Jefferson Bible. And he basically cuts out all the miracles. He cuts out any signs of Jesus' divinity, cuts out Christmas, cuts out Easter, and turns it into, you know, sort of a collection of Jesus' sayings and his wisdom, which Jefferson thought were profound. But obviously, you know, you can kind of imagine the campaign ad.
Right, right.
In this election.
Yeah, cutting up the Bible.
You know, shadowy figure off in the dust with the scissors,
yeah,
cutting through the pages of the Bible. I think that might hurt his poll numbers.
And the end result, Stephen Waldman, the book is Founding Faith, the end result is that he sort of saw it much more as perhaps like almost like Islam or Buddhism, that our spiritual leader is a great teacher, but not necessarily God himself.
In the case of Jesus, yeah, that is the way he approached it. He believed that he still was partial to it. It's not that he thought all religions were equal. He actually thought Jesus' teachings were the best he'd ever seen,
yeah,
and that if it had been allowed to go forth uncorrupted, it would dominate the earth as a kind of moral code.
Right. But that the church had corrupted the teachings.
Yeah. And almost from day one, it's not just, you know, the Spanish Inquisition.
Right.
He thought the apostles ruined it, and Paul ruined it, and Calvin. He said, the best response to Calvin is a straitjacket.
Oh, my God. Ah, Jefferson. We're talking with Stephen Waldman. The book is Founding Faith, Providence, Politics, and the Birth of Religious Freedom in America. Stephen, of course, the co-founder, CEO, and editor-in-chief of BeliefNet.com, which we want to talk about before we run out of time here in a few minutes. But Stephen, can you tell us real quick, when we hear evangelicals say this is a Christian nation, America was founded on biblical principles, we should have the Ten Commandments in stone in our schools and our public buildings, what's your take on that, having studied how religious freedom really came to be in America?
Well, I'd say America as a land, the New World, was in fact settled to be a Christian land, and for the first 150 years they tried that. By the time they got up to the Revolution and the Constitution, they concluded that that approach didn't work, and so they did a sharp turn away from the approach of the fathers and grandfathers towards a new approach that was very much about promoting religion, and for 99% of them that meant promoting Christianity, but very specifically and clearly by having the national government stay away from having any official association with religion. Now, the only asterisk I have to put on this, which is a bit maddening, is that it was a compromise. It was a political compromise they came up with, and one of the points of the political compromise was that we will have this neutral federal government, but you at the state levels can do pretty much whatever you want, including having official religions. And so in some ways, they kind of kicked the can down the road for us, and you know, it's part of why we've spent the next 200 years arguing over this, is they didn't resolve it all. They disagreed with each other, and they left a lot of ambiguity, which we are here still trying to figure out.
Stephen Waldman, the book is Founding Faith, and tell us about beliefnet.com, and we want to encourage folks to go to that website, to get this book, go to the website. What will folks find at beliefnet.com?
Well, for one thing, related to the book, if you go to beliefnet.com/foundingfaith, one word, we have a collection of the letters of the founding fathers on their religious beliefs, including the first time an online version of the Jefferson Bible, where you can click on a little scissors icon and see what he cut.
Oh, cool.
It's really interesting.
Yeah.
In general, BeliefNet is the largest religious and spiritual website, and it's quite broad. It's partly information about any kind of spiritual approach, partly community, all sorts of. We have a social network where people can create their own profiles and load video and photos and stuff like that and meet other people at a similar point in their spiritual journey. Part of it is analysis and news, certainly a lot, you know, related to religion and the campaigns and things like that. So it's kind of a mix of community and magazine.
Stephen Waldman of BeliefNet.com. The book is Founding Faith, Providence, Politics, and the Birth of Religious Freedom in America. Stephen, I've really enjoyed it. We've run out of time, but I hope you might be able to join us again.
I would love to.
Fantastic. I'll get in touch with you. Stephen
Waldman,
thank you, Steve. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.